everyone is a star child, made of stardust and the infinite potential of the universe. This extraordinary, fearless something in each of us clamors for freedom from the bonds of fear, conformity, and an ordinary life. Welcome to Dr. Durr's Living in the Sweet Spot, where practical tools and solutions from the intersection of mind-body medicine, science, and spiritual well-being awaken and empower you to live out your infinite potential, to live life in the sweet spot. Hello, everyone. I am Dr. Balan A. Durr, and thank you for joining me again for another episode of Dr. Durr's Living in the Sweet Spot. We are talking about living out your greatest demonstration of infinite potential through the gateway of brain health and transformative thinking. And we're having those conversations, myself and my guest, from the intersection of mind, body, medicine, science, and spiritual well-being. And I am so happy today to have that conversation with my guest, Ellie Pinkering. And Ellie is a licensed acupuncturist, and she also has her master's degree in Chinese medicine, and she is board certified and licensed with the state of Illinois. She's been practicing since 1987. She's also a certified in Chinese reproductive medicine through the American Board of Oriental and Reproductive Medicine. And she also teaches yoga in addition to acupuncture and massage. So I want to welcome Ellie and say thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So you know what? So, you know, I always think it's good to start at the beginning and just share with folks how you and I met. So it was actually a little over 3 years ago. And I actually had to take my specialty boards for general psychiatry. And frankly, I had finished my training in general psychiatry 1999, did my fellowship in child and adolescent psychiatry in 2000. And frankly, because sciences were a challenge for me, I put off taking my boards. Frankly, I told myself that, you know, if it was a challenge for me, you know, learning sciences, that basically, how is I going to be able to pass my specialty boards? However, given this work that I'm doing, you know, I have to embody the message, right? So you can't be telling people to demonstrate their greatest potential, but me giving into my fear about this, correct? So basically, I said, I forced myself to take them. But that being said, I was like an absolute terror about taking them. So the day of my general psychiatry boards, you know, woke up, and this exam is an 8.5 hour exam, okay? All day long. And so I get up, and then as I'm getting ready, I started getting muscle spasms, which for me, sometimes I will get them if I'm just feeling really stressed. And so, you know, took a little ibuprofen, it settled down fine, got to the testing center, and very quickly my right eye started hurting. I mean, like, it was hurting enough so that, and I wear contact lenses, so that it was really distracting from taking the exam. Took the lens out, cleaned it. It didn't make a difference. And it was so bad, I really wanted to quit, but I was like, you cannot. You're going to have to sit here and get through it, right? So finish the exam, go home, and Ellie, and this is a great demonstration of how our emotions can greatly affect our bodies and our health. Ellie, my back seized up and I was off from work for 2 days because the level, again, I felt sheer terror about taking that exam. And so it like I said, so I was off for two days. I call and so I had called off, and I called also the chief medical officer, and I said to her, I said, I just wanted you to know, you know, what was going on. This is what happened. And she said you should have some acupuncture done. Gave me this list of you know, practitioners that's down in Chinatown. You know, we're here in the Chicago area, but I really didn't want to have to go to Chinatown because that's potentially 30, 40 minutes. And so in looking for some, let me find somebody closer to home. I found you. So, and then, you know, of course you did your evaluation. And one of the things I had also told you about that I was experiencing at the time was I had injured my right shoulder, and I was going to physical therapy, but I was having so much pain that I really couldn't do the physical therapy. I've had other sports injuries, you know, because I was an athlete, but also, you know, wrestling with my son at different times, I injured this shoulder. And so I kind of knew what to do, but I was taking fish oil, which usually helps with the inflammation. That wasn't helping. And the physical therapy, when I did that with this shoulder, the fish oil helped the inflammation go down, so I could do the physical therapy. The shoulder healed. It was fine. But this wasn't working this time. So in doing the evaluation, you said to me that you were going to treat me for the shoulder as well. So by this point, because I wasn't getting anywhere with physical therapy, the fish oil wasn't helping. I actually had stopped both of them. And the most amazing thing happened. And I remember, you know, I remember when you were treating me, and initially with the shoulder, I would have to hold my arm off the bed, off the table, in order to take the pressure off of it and let it rotate upwards. But the most amazing thing that happened was after six treatments with you, my shoulder was fine. It was perfectly fine. It was all better. And again, I'm telling people, I said I wasn't doing physical therapy. I wasn't taking fish oil, nothing. I wasn't taking, it was Ellie.
Ellie. Be of service to you.
Yes. So then of course, also, you know, and of course then my back got well as well, which of course, again, to me, that was stress induced. But yeah, so I wanted people to, you know, get an understanding of what, you know, acupuncture is, what traditional Chinese medicine is, because Western medicine is Western medicine, but it's not the end all be all. Frankly, I think it focuses a lot on illness rather than on health and rather than on prevention, really. And so Chinese medicine is really a different way, I know, of looking at things. It's another tool in the toolkit. And so, you know, share with us what exactly Chinese traditional medicine is, or traditional Chinese medicine is in acupuncture.
Sure. Well, it's, you know, it's been around for at least 5,000 years. And of course, you know, it has evolved over the years as well. But what we practice today is really, you know, based on theory that was, you know, developed, you know, during, you know, at least like 200 BC. So a lot of the theory that was established at that time is still in practice today. And it's long and it's complicated, but Chinese medicine is a very practical system. So if I were to really sum it up in like one sentence, what it is we are trying to do, mm-hmm. is we're trying to create balance in the body.
Okay.
And so that involves really kind of taking a look at the whole body. What are all the different organ systems doing? What kind of symptoms are you having? And, you know, we also look at your tongue, we take your pulse, and all those things tell us, you know, basically the state of being. And from all those things, we assess, and then we come up with a Chinese diagnosis. So
let me just say that. Let me say this, because I'm sure some people are going, looking at your tongue, what's that going to tell you? So one, it's a system of focusing on, as I say, balance grasshopper, right?
Exactly.
Balance grasshopper. And then the other thing is, and it's part of what we do in traditional medicine as well, in terms of examining somebody, their tongue. But what kind of things can you see by looking at somebody's tongue?
Well, we basically look at the color of the tongue. We look at the sublingual veins underneath the tongue, the shape of the tongue coating. And, for instance, if the tongue is, I mean, let's put it this way. A healthy tongue is pink with a light white coat. If the tongue is a little more red, that indicates that there's heat in the body. Could mean inflammation. If the sublingual veins underneath the tongue are dark, that could mean, well, what we call blood stasis. Blood stasis can manifest itself in many different ways, but one of the ways it can manifest is in severe pain. If the tongue is swollen and I see teeth marks along the sides of the tongue, there are imbalances in the digestive system. So, the tongue provides clues as to what's going on in the rest of the body.
Yeah, so because I'm kind because part of you were going, my tongue, how do you gonna make a diagnosis for my tongue? But yeah, that's very helpful, right? It can also be an indicator, right, if someone is their level of hydration, right?
Absolutely.
Versus
And
dehydration.
sometimes it could mean they're not drinking enough water. Some people are on medications that can, like water pills can, they make you lose water, become dehydrated. So, if there's a lot of heat in the body, sometimes the tongue coating can be a little yellow. Sometimes it can be the coffee that you drank before you came into the office. So the tongue is one diagnostic tool. The
Okay.
is the most important diagnostic tool.
You said what is?
The pulse.
The pulse. Okay. So tell us about that.
Okay, so you have three pulses in each wrist, and each pulse corresponds to a different pair of organs. And when I'm listening to your pulse, I'm listening to the rate of your pulse, the depth of your pulse, and the quality of the pulse. And that tells me what's happening in each organ system because people are not always forthcoming about what's happening in their bodies for whatever reason.
No.
Some people lie. And, but the
My
pulse,
patients are always forthcoming.
but the pulse never lies. So if I suspect things, I can always count on the pulse. But again, the pulse, the tongue, and all the information, the patient, shares with me, chooses to share with me, helps me to come to an assessment. And or your Chinese diagnosis. We call them patterns. We look for patterns in the body. And once I've established your patterns, then that pretty much tells me everything I need to do. They tell me exactly where your needles are going to go. And then, of course, that's only, one part of healing. Because there's so many things that can influence your health, we have to look at everything. And, what I call the four pillars of good health are sleep, exercise, stress, and diet. And, because sometimes people come in and they're looking for that magic needle, or that herbal formula that's going to make everything better. But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. And I have to be the bearer of bad news oftentimes, saying, well, this is what you need to do outside of treatment. I may spend 1 hour with a person during the week, But there's so many more hours during the week that the patient can be doing things.
Right. Or as I like to say that, I'm the coach, but as the coach, I can tell you what plays to run, but I can't get out on the field and run the play for you.
Right.
Right.
That's a
So
great
you're,
analogy.
yes. Yeah. So, yeah. So you're saying something similar. And, with you, it's the magic needle. With me, it's, the magic pill, right?
Right,
So,
right.
and there is no such thing, right? And then you
No.
also have to have the right solution for whatever the issue is, right? So I tell people, if you run out of gas, it doesn't help you to put air in your tires.
Right.
So you're looking at all four of these pillars, as you call them, the four pillars, right?
Right.
In order to make a determination about which one or ones can be beneficial. So what, again, I tend to call them tools, are considered actual part of traditional Chinese medicine.
Acupuncture, and then there is what we call accessory techniques, and those are things like massage, cupping, gua sha, moxibustion, electrical stimulation. Those are used in conjunction with acupuncture to just kind of accentuate the effects of the treatment. Diet is a very important part of Chinese medicine, and of course, Chinese herbs. I would say those are probably, the primary components.
Okay. And then, what kinds of, just give me like an example of like maybe three of maybe the most common Chinese herbs that you use.
Well, oh my goodness. See, there's Dongui. And that's another thing to understand about Chinese herbs is, rarely are herbs ever given, prescribed like in a single herb. They are made up of formulas, so they're like recipes. And you'll have what's called your chief herb. That's the primary herb that is in the formula, and then it's made up of a number of other herbs that, promote the effectiveness of the chief herb. If you're working with like raw herbs, you can actually customize the formula. If a person has like a lot of heat in the body, then you might add more cooling herbs to it. Raw herbs are, a lot of schools are not teaching raw herbs anymore. They're switching to granules or pill form herbs because the raw herbs, which you boil and make a tea out of, taste really bad. They're really strong, usually really bitter, and you have to boil them for like 40 to 45 minutes. And so people tend to, they don't comply with the herbs. So the herbs are not going to work if you don't take them.
So yeah, so like for instance, there is something that I was using, like reishi mushrooms and shishandra berry,
Okay.
and it was in order to help, help my, with speeding up the liver in order to help clear toxins faster. And I was like, "Ooh,
Okay.
this stuff tastes like bark."
Yeah, they do taste bad.
tastes like I'm just eating bark straight off a tree.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
so,
Yeah.
but that being said, it worked, right? Because the benefit was I had asked them at the health food store in terms of our improving energy. And so they were saying, of course, explaining, of course, the liver, it breaks down toxins, it breaks down medications, but it helps clear toxins from your body. So if it's working, speeding it up, it's breaking those down and eliminating them from your body faster, which of course is then going to give you more energy, which it did. But like I said, I just feel like I had gone outside and pulled some bark off the
Yeah.
So,
Kind of hold your nose and drink it down.
So, but like anything, I got used to it. So even if I haven't had it for quite a while, and then I go back to drinking again, I'm going, yeah, this doesn't taste so bad.
Yeah,
Right.
you do. I mean, it's kind of an acquired taste.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, and speaking of acquired taste, and Ellie and and all the experiences that I should say, and all the time that you've been taking care of me, I know that you even deliver the bark tasting medicine with some agave syrup, knowing you, because some people might use honey, but I know you use an agave syrup, so that helps it go down much more smoothly, right?
Yeah, I usually people do ask, can I add honey to this? Can I add sugar? And usually I'm like, it's not going to help. Trust me, especially if they've never had Chinese herbs before. More people are doing granules, and so they are, raw herbs that are basically processed into a powder form. And you can customize the formula like you would a raw herb formula, but now it's in powder form and you can put that in capsules.
So you were saying in terms of traditional Chinese medicine, then there's use acupuncture, there's the herbs, and I'm sorry, what was the other one?
Well, there's two more things. There are what we call accessory techniques. Accessory techniques are like, massage, cupping, gua sha, moxibustion, more like manual techniques, and then diet. And I am a
So wait,
huge
there
foodie.
was one that you mentioned. Was it wax? How did you say it?
Moxibustion.
Yes, what's that?
So moxibustion is the burning of an herb on or near the skin. Doesn't actually burn you. And basically what it does is it moves stagnant qi or energy, and it warms the body.
And what's the benefit of that?
If a person has a lot of stagnation in the body, and stagnation can present itself in many different ways, but one common way is pain. Pain is stagnant qi. Then I can now moxa comes in many different forms, and the moxa sticks, they kind of look like a cigar, and then you light it, and then after you insert a needle, you'll take the moxa stick and wave it around the point. That's one system, and what it does is it warms up the area and helps to move that stagnant qi. It's not appropriate for all pain, like if someone had, rheumatoid arthritis where there's a lot of swelling and heat and inflammation, because you don't want to add more heat to that area. You would use, other techniques. So.
Okay, and so I've had cupping also,
Okay.
just one time. You didn't do it when someone else did it. And so what is cupping, and what is why do you do cupping?
Okay, so cupping, there's again different techniques. I do the more authentic cupping where you have like a glass, looks kind of like a round glass clear jar, but it's, and then you take a cotton ball, you douse it in alcohol, put it on the end of a hemostat, you light it on fire, and then you stick it inside the cup so that it burns up the oxygen, and then very quickly you apply it to the skin. So it creates this vacuum and sucks the skin up a little bit. And what it does is it draws out impurities, brings toxins to the surface. I like to do, there's
What if I, wait a minute, what if I don't want my toxins exposed?
well, some cupping, it'll leave like, Like you probably saw during the Olympics or whatever, a lot of the athletes were getting cupping, and you saw these round marks, usually on their spine. It does kind of draw blood to the surface and sometimes will leave those marks on your skin.
Yes, yeah, because I that was definitely my experience. I had these big round marks where the cup,
Right.
that went on the in the circle of the opening of the cup, and like all of this area was round, red in here.
Correct. Yes. I like to do that. I call that stationary cupping. There's also something called slide cupping, which is what I really love to do. And you have to apply lotion to the skin. And then once you apply the cup to the skin, then you can slide the cup. Like it works great along the spine. So I can slide the cup all the way up the spine and down the spine. By the time I finish, it looks like you have two red racing stripes down along the side of your spine. It also helps to break up adhesion. So if there's tightness in the muscle tissue and the connective tissue and the skin, it helps to break up those adhesions. So it can address pain as well.
Okay.
It's really
So
good.
it removes toxins, it helps with adhesions, and what was the third one that cupping does?
It removes toxins and it can break up adhesions and eliminate pain.
Okay, and eliminate pain. Okay. And then so then I think then the last one would have been diet. The last modality.
Yes,
Yes.
I
Last.
am a huge foodie, and in Chinese medicine, we basically look at food as medicine and prescribe it according to your Chinese diagnosis.
Okay, so now tell me, why do they look at food as medicine?
Well, anything you ingest into the body is going to affect the body in some way or another, whether it's an herb, whether it's a drug, whether it's food, it affects the body on some level. So taking a look at a person's diet also helps me figure out, what's, whether is diet contributing to this problem? And I feel like, we have to eat, right? So before I prescribe herbs, in most cases, I like to address the diet first, because then a person may not need to take herbs if you address the diet. And then patient saves themselves money. We have to eat anyway. It's a big one for a lot of people to change is diet. But I really love it, and I love working with people and helping them to, change their diets. And sometimes it can be difficult because some people hate cooking, or more what I encounter more is people don't have time to cook. So helping people to eat better and just changing up their diet with recipes that are fast and easy, but are also beneficial.
Right. So one of the things that I attempt to do, because I have feel the same way about food as medicine, and the way I'll explain it to people is that if you think of this, in order to build a quality structure, you have to have two things: quality raw materials, quality workmanship. And so what that means in terms of brain health is, again, what raw materials are you giving your brain to build healthy brain cells with so they can function properly? So your brain needs certain, neurotransmitters. It needs certainly, it needs blood flow and blood sugar, and it needs certain minerals. So, for instance, with depression and anxiety, it needs things like magnesium and selenium and zinc and chromium, maybe sometimes iron. So, again, how are you eating? People think that taking supplements can be, wasted money, down the toilet, as it were. But the fact of the matter is, again, how are people eating? How's the food prepared? Also, food itself is being changed, right? You see things in reference to, has it been genetically altered? And even for instance, like wheat used to be shoulder high, but now wheat is so short, it's almost a dwarf plant. So your body doesn't process that in the same way that it used to process that plant that was shoulder high. So to me, that's why, again, the importance of food in brain health, as you say, food is medicine, is why that's true, right? And so if you're not getting quality materials, you can't make quality brain cells, and then it's not it's then it's going you're going to have dysfunction. If your brain is impaired, then something about the way you think, feel, behave, or the way your body works is going to be impaired because your brain runs everything.
Exactly. And when I do nutritional evaluations with people, one of the things I have people do is a 6-day food diary. Ask people not to change the way they eat, just eat how you normally eat, which oftentimes I can tell people do change the way they eat. Some days look really good. I'm like, well, their diet looks pretty good. And then it's slowly, as the week goes on, I can begin to see more what the diet really is. And it's hard, you know.
Sugar, give me that sugar.
Then the potato chips start creeping back into the diet, and the flaming hot Cheetos.
Sugar and
but
fat, man. Sugar and fat.
it's hard because you know what? Those snack foods are tasty, and so it's a process. It can take many months to make that transition, but the motivation to keep that up really comes from how changing your diet makes you feel.
Right.
And
And to your point about how it makes you feel, it's they've shown where some they think sugar is probably 100 times more addictive than cocaine. I've seen some studies say that, right? And so it's important to recognize and I've and it's important so it's important to recognize that sugar and fats, they're hitting that part of your brain that is part of the pleasure and motivation center. And so it's reinforcing to eat certain kinds of food because they do help you feel good. And I know there are times, when and I'm a stress eater. The work I do is highly stressful. And there'll be times when, so I'll eat something, I'm sitting there and I feel it hit my brain, right? And I feel and I go, I feel the go over me. So it's and food, maybe unlike some maybe some other drug or excuse me, drug or alcohol or the like, the difference is you can abstain from those things. You can't abstain from food and live.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we have to make choices every day, many times during the day. And, it can take time for sure. And
Right. So
some,
you were saying that you have them do the food diary and then go from where?
then from there, I basically evaluate the food diary. And then I set up a separate appointment. It takes about 1 hour and 15 minutes, and I have a whole booklet of, basically foods to avoid, foods to eat, food combining for better digestion. So there's a ton of information in there for people to get started, because a lot of it is educational as well, because people. We don't grow up learning how to use food as medicine. There might be a few, grandma's recipe, chicken noodle soup and things like that. But, we really don't grow up knowing that watermelon is a really strong diuretic. And we just.
Although, if you pay attention, it's running you to the bathroom. So you may not know the call of the diuretic, but it's making you go pee, right?
Yeah, right.
Making you go
Right.
pee.
Exactly. You may not even connect the two. And so just helping people to understand and, and I've, I mean, I've looked at some, really seriously horrible diets. Like one of the things when I, once I get a person's food diary, I categorize everything according to the different food groups. And then I also have categories for processed foods and sweets and caffeine and alcohol. And I've, I just recently did a nutritional evaluation, and 40% of the person's diet was made up of processed foods and sweets. That's a lot. 40% of a person's diet, that's a lot.
Wow.
Yeah. And they're having pretty, serious health issues.
So
And
obviously, without necessarily speaking to them in specifically, but kind of generally, what kind of health problems can someone experience from eating a lot of, I mean, eating 40% of your diet is processed foods?
a lot of digestive issues can be irritable bowel syndrome, high blood.
Constipation,
Oh yeah, that's a huge one.
right? Constipation.
Yeah, I have a whole page in my nutrition booklet on constipation and foods to eat because there's different types of constipation. And in Chinese medicine, we're really big on knowing what your bowel movements are like because they tell you what's happening internally. And of course, constipation is a form of stagnation. Things are not moving. And try
Right.
to figure out why are they not moving.
Right.
So it could be diet related. Oftentimes it's, diet related. Sometimes it can be due to medication that a person is taking, which you have to work with. And sometimes it can be stress. Everyone takes their stress in different parts of their body. For some people, it can be digestion. Other people, it can be insomnia. Some people, it can be chronic headaches. So there's a lot to kind of assess in regards to, I always tell people things don't happen for no reason at all.
There you go. There you go.
Sometimes the reason is obvious, sometimes it's not, and you have to, sometimes you have to kind of help people along too. So, a lot of people don't mention a lot of stuff because they don't think it's important. So, trying to get them, like, well, what was happening during this time? Was there some kind of traumatic event that occurred? And letting people know that it's okay. I'm interested in those things. And so then getting people to start talking about, yeah, well, actually this did happen around that time.
Well, sometimes they also, I've had patients say to me, it's none of your business. This is my business.
I mean, when you're first meeting someone, you don't know them, and it can be difficult for people to share such personal details about themselves. So that becomes important too, is, developing trust with someone. They can trust you. And you're there, I'm there to really help them. I really want to see people do better. And I do. I mean, I see sometimes, people really take the bull by the horns and they make it happen. And that makes me feel so good. Other people, all I can do is hope that at least I planted a little seed that
Yes.
at some point will grow. And because healing, it's their personal path, and when they're ready.
Right. Sometimes the seed falls on stony ground.
Yeah,
It
exactly.
does
You got to
not
wait for
take.
the wind to blow,
Well,
and
the wind can blow, but it's going to blow it someplace else because it does not take root, right? And sometimes it never does. And we have to, as healers, have to be okay with that. So with that being said, one of the things I just was, so you mentioned constipation, you mentioned irritable bowel. Is there like one or two other one or two other illnesses that people can develop as a consequence of eating 40% of, of processed foods and sugars. Just one or two more.
Wow. Insomnia.
Okay.
Headaches, migraines. Diet can affect just about everything. Edema in the body.
Okay. And inflammation, right? Because inflammation is, they're finding is really kind of, see, how do we say this? Just basically that as they look at it, inflammation is part of almost probably every illness process that's occurring in the body. So, which is why it's so fundamentally important. So that being said, let's talk about acupuncture. Right. So what is it other than sticking somebody with some needles? And of course, I have the picture of you because I wanted to prove it. I have it where I have the picture you took of me, right, with the needles where you had needled me in the face. Besides the other areas that you needle to be right. But what is acupuncture and what are the benefits? What does it do? What does it do?
So when a needle is inserted, there are basically four things that occur. The first thing, which is
Other
pretty
than
obvious.
ouch.
Yeah, right.
But not always. I'm just teasing a little bit, everybody. It's
Oh,
just
that's okay. That's okay.
sometimes you like barely feel it. Sometimes you barely feel it. And then there's other times, when sometimes you needle those really inflamed areas. That's when the ouches occur. But yeah, so go ahead. There's the insertion of the needle and what happens?
So the first thing, it's going to increase blood flow to the area. So oftentimes when I insert a needle, within, seconds, I can see the area kind of redden up a little bit. The second thing is that it increases the flow of chi, energy. The third thing that occurs is it causes your own body's endorphins to be released. So those are your body's sort of like natural pain relieving mechanism.
Right, it's your body's own opiates, in other words.
Correct. So that will help to alleviate pain, and those endorphins also really help people to sleep better. It's temporary because it does leave the body, but poor sleep, insomnia affects so many people that just, trying to get people to sleep better can be a huge part of the battle. And then the fourth thing is, you hear my dog barking? Okay, I'm just going to shut the door. Sorry about that. So the fourth thing that occurs is every acupuncture point in the body has its own specific function. So based on your Chinese diagnosis, I choose points that are going to have a certain physiological reaction. So for instance, if I know someone's sleep is bad, there is a specific point just for sleep that I will needle. I mean, the culmination of all the needles because of the endorphins will help sleep, but there's a specific point just for sleep that I'll use. There's actually points for constipation. But let's
They're
say
bladder points, right?
there.
In the ankle, right? In my ankle. I'm trying to remember
Well,
that.
actually, there's a number of points for constipation, but there's a number of them like in the area around the belly button. But
And so, in other words, you're saying that they're not always located where you would expect them to, where we
exactly.
in like proximal or close to the area where
Yeah, you have proximal
that's
and then
actually being
distal.
affected. So let me do this because I just want to make the point. I know there's some, you know, folks that I've talked to about getting that I've talked to about getting acupuncture. And, you know, one, I know people are afraid of needles. Some of my friends that I've recommended, I think that they would really benefit from it. They, you know, just again, they're scared of needles. And I think also, again, sometimes people don't really understand the benefits of it. You know, it's kind of woo woo. So one of the things you've already mentioned was the fact that it helps your body's natural opiates release. And to help healing pain, it increases blood flow. Blood flow is a vital, important part of one, getting things to areas in your body that need those nutrients, those amino acids, those, you know, various ingredients that it needs in order to build healthy cells, but also in terms of carrying things away and removing toxins. So then the other thing too, that I think people may not understand about chi or energy is that everything in the physical universe and therefore in your body is composed of energy. So the energy is just organized in a certain way so that it appears in a certain physical form. It appears as energy organized. So it appears as your skin, as your liver, as your heart, right? As your digestive system. So the movement of energy it is an important element to health. It's not just woo-woo, but for our friends or folks that are listening, that are listening and, you know, ask why does, you know, inserting the needle, why does it hurt? Why does it hurt? Other than inflammation, which I already mentioned.
You know? Right. Sometimes there are just areas of the body that are a little more sensitive. So when the needle is inserted, you know, you'll feel like a little pinching sensation, sometimes a little burning sensation. And, you know, usually that should go away oftentimes instantly, sometimes maybe after like 20, 30 seconds. If it doesn't, then I will adjust the needle because a person should not be lying there in discomfort. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, there's different size needles as well. Mm-hmm. Once I work with someone, I can kind of gauge what size needle to use with them and how many needles to use. For someone who might be really super sensitive, I'll use what's called a sarin needle, which is a Japanese needle, and it's your thinnest, finest needle that you can use, and they insert very smoothly. I think there might be a little less stimulation with those needles, so I don't like to, you know, just go with all sarin needles, but usually like the face and some other points, I'll use the sarin, but then I'll switch to another needle that might have a little more stimulation. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, so I always tell people, you know, just give it a try. And if you don't like it, that's okay. It may not be for everybody. The hurdle. Go ahead.
So, yeah, I'm sorry. I was thinking about, again, what are some areas that acupuncture, Chinese, and I'm saying medicine can be helpful in particular? Because one of the things that I know of, and you might not expect this, is the fact that, and you have certification for this, which is, you know, acupuncture can be helpful when people have addictions. And I say have addictions because a person is a being. They're not their doing, so they're not their illness, they're not their addiction. So I don't call them addicts. They are people with addictions. It can be with that. It can be useful at that. It can be useful with infertility, and just what are some of the other, you know, benefits or areas of health? Even there's some related to brain health that acupuncture or Chinese medicine may be helpful with.
Chinese medicine really can be used to treat just about any type of medical condition, except for like emergency type situations. You know, if you're, you know, I remember that was one of the questions when I was taking my boards. I think they must have thrown it in for a sense of humor, but if you're, you know, if you think you might be having a heart attack, then it listed a number of different points, and then they put points 911 Obviously, the answer is yes. If someone's having a heart attack, you're going to call 911. You know, they're going to call 911 and you're going to go to the hospital. I'm not going to try to treat that. But the types of conditions that I see, you know, most frequently are back pain, a lot of back pain, headaches, arthritic pain. So I would say pain conditions in general. Most people don't know that Chinese medicine can treat, you know, a lot more than just pain. Until they come in and then I see they've got this going on and that going on. And oftentimes, although it can treat pain, you also have to figure out, well, why is this person having pain? And sometimes it can be, you know, overuse syndrome. Sometimes it can be they have a very sedentary lifestyle and they don't move, develop imbalances in the muscles and or you know, just the aging process and you know, starting to have degenerative problems in the spine. But there's still things people can do. So I often see what I do as adjunct therapy for lifestyle changes. There's only one way to strengthen a muscle, and that is to work the muscle. Acupuncture is not going to strengthen your muscle for you. But
It's not because I think it's you lifting the needle, not me, right?
but sometimes, you know, the way it can is connected is a person may not be exercising because they're really fatigued. And of course, they shouldn't exercise if they're really fatigued. It'll fatigue them even more. And then maybe the reason they're fatigued is because their sleep is really bad. And maybe their sleep is really bad because they have a lot of stress in their lives. So, you know, you have to really get to the root of the problem, you know, addressing the stress, then address the sleep, improve the energy, get them to start exercising, a reasonable exercise program, and then they're going to feel better.
So in light of that, then we know that the body has its own wisdom, its own, way, its own wisdom of healing, frankly. And so I think we as healers, of course, just provide support for it to do what the body already knows how to do. Obviously, some things that are more serious require real serious intervention, right? You're talking about 911, for instance, because it needs more intensive support. But basically, what is it that someone can do to promote their own body's natural healing and the wisdom and the own healing potential that their body has that is health?
I think the first step is just becoming aware of what's going on in their bodies. Your body's going to tell you when something is not right. And oftentimes that is through pain. And so you have to listen. And it's like, well, you know, why am I having this pain? And you know, some people try to push through their pain. Or they want to do something and they don't care what they have to put their bodies through to achieve something. But in the end, the body always wins over. So you have to listen to your body. I see this often, particularly in men that are, you know, starting to get into their 50s and the aging process might be accelerating a little bit. Want to be able to do what they used to do. Very hard for them to accept that aging process and that you have to make adjustments in your lifestyle to accommodate the aging body. And so basically, once again, you know, we do change, our bodies change throughout our lives, and making adjustments in diet, You know, we have to work harder to stay stronger and flexible. We have to learn how to manage our stress. I mean, our bodies do their best for us, but they do have their breaking point, and they're going to tell you, you know, your body's going to tell you when something's not right. You know, so again, it goes back to the four pillars of, you know, diet, stress, exercise, and sleep. And you have to kind of take a look at all those things and make the adjustments that you need so your body can heal it. Your body wants to heal. You just have to let it.
Yes, allow it and support it. And, right. You know, one of the things you mentioned in terms of stretching that I thought of, which was also about the fact that the body is made of about a third of collagen, right? So hair, skin, nails, joints, and bones, and also even gut health, which gut health is an important part of our immune system. So that, you know, we used to eat a lot more soups and things that had bones in it. So you get the contents of the bone and the marrow into whatever it was you're eating, more jello. And so just even taking more collagen in can help with one being more flexible. And I noticed it's something that, you know, was very useful to me. I'm sitting for long periods of time and it'd be real stiff getting up. And when I started taking collagen again, then that issue just resolved. And very quickly, I mean, within a matter of days, and I mean, I do mean a few days, couple, two or three. So to your point, I think that, again, you're absolutely right about the importance of getting our body's basic things that it needs in order to be healthy and to heal itself. And so Miss Ellie, if somebody wanted to connect with you and get services, you know, from you, and obviously, you know, you're wonderfully patient and you love to educate and inform and make, you know, your services available to as many people as possible. So how do people get in touch with you? How do they schedule appointments with you?
Well, you can go to my website and you can actually schedule an appointment online. Or if you don't like the computer, you can call me.
Okay. And what's your website?
The website is Bodyscape. There's no S on the end of that. .biz. E as in boy, I, Z as in zebra.
Okay. So BODYSCAPE.biz.
Correct.
B as in boy, I, Z as in zebra, right?
Correct.
And then if they wanted to call you?
They can call me at 847-864-6464.
Okay. And again, that number is?
847-864-6464.
So, well, Ellie, I thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Yeah. You know, I love having these conversations with many of the people that I know. They bring such wisdom and expertise to the people that they care for and help and elevate. And I know that traditional Chinese medicine and, you know, acupuncture is not something that most people are aware of. So again, I thank you for joining me today. And you know, so for my listeners, I hope that you have found this time you know, beneficial. And I hope you have learned something that you found meaningful and useful to your overall health, to your brain health, and to your way of seeing yourself and health and possibilities, and that it is something that awakens and empowers you again to live out your infinite potential. So if you liked us, please share, please let you know, other people know. Also, you know, follow us you know, on the different social platforms, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And Stay tuned for next week's episode. And this has been Dr. Balan A. Durr, awakening and empowering you to live out your infinite potential, to live life in the sweet spot. Thank you for joining us today in the sweet spot. Share, follow, and like us on social media. To learn more, please visit BalinADurrMD.com, spelled BalinADurrMD.com. Join us next week, and remember, when you heal your mind, all things are possible.